Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Suzanne Eder of Solid Ground Transformational Life Coaching, and in today's interview, I'm representing Living Well magazine, for which I write a monthly column on personal growth and transformation. You can learn more about my work at mysolidground.com and more about Living Well magazine at livingwellmagazine.net. And I'm so excited about today's guest because not only is she an amazingly gifted best-selling author and teacher, she's my beloved coach and mentor. For many of you who know me well, you know I'm talking about none other than Tam McKeeves. Let me introduce her. Tam McKeeves, an honor graduate of Harvard Law School, left her law practice to write and help others live their calling. She is the best-selling author of This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love, and her soon-to-be-released second book, Inspired and Unstoppable, Wildly Succeeding in Your Life's Work, which we'll be talking about with her today. Featured on Oprah Radio, she is a sought-after speaker and career success coach who has helped thousands worldwide to discover, launch, and thrive in the life, calling, and businesses of their dreams. She's presented at TEDx and at Canyon Ranch. Says Tama, "I was put on this earth to champion visionary minds, creative souls, freedom seekers, change agents, and all who dare to live and work from inspiration instead of fear." She grew her own creative empire into an international presence through inspired and unconventional means. Tama has been inspiring audiences across the United States and Canada with her electrifying presence, cutting-edge humor, emotional realness, and the big possibilities she brings into every room. You can join her and her Alive Tribe on Twitter, Facebook, and at Tama Keeves, that's T-A-M-A-K-I-E-V as in Victor, E-S.com, TamaKeeves.com. So Tama, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yay!
Yay! I've been so looking forward to this. So let's jump in. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to do this work?
How I came to do this work? Like many things, I came to do this work by doing the wrong work, by making, so I think a lot of us find our life calling by finding out what definitely does not work. So basically, when I was younger, I knew that I wanted to write. I had that dream, but in my family, that was considered crazy, frivolous, impractical. I'm sure many families are like that. And so I buried that dream, and I went off to law school, got accepted to Harvard Law School, graduated with honors. I was on partnership track, major law firm. And I had what our culture tells us is success. You know, it looked great, but it felt horrible. I felt so empty and so meaningless, and I just kept feeling like, there's got to be something more. This can't be it. There's got to be something else. And I think so many people feel that because they know there's something else. They know there's something more. And so I guess what really started this work for me, you know, besides the fact that I had a total meltdown and just finally walked out of my legal career and sat on a beach and reinvented my life and decided I wanted to at least try writing. But I think the main thing that I want to say is that it was a belief I had that stopped me from my dreams. You know, I made the assumption that, well, you can't make money as a writer. And I just had that belief, and I never questioned it, and that became my life. And so much of the work that I do now about finding your calling, thriving in your calling, living a calling, is about looking at those beliefs or undoing that belief. It's always about undoing all the beliefs that are in the way because we're meant to live that calling. So that's how I started all this.
Yeah, and I hope that we remember to circle back on those beliefs question. But I'm curious about what inspired you to write this particular book, Inspired and Unstoppable, Wildly Succeeding in Your Life's Work.
Oh, come on. Who doesn't want that?
I want it. I thought you wrote it just for me.
No, actually, I wrote it for me. And that's really, truly how I write. I write the books I'm looking for. You know, I was looking for that book because I had this dream, I had this calling, I had this desire, and I was limping along in it. And, you know, I'd be in bookstores, scavenging the bookstores, and you know, there'd be all these business books on how to succeed and, you know, the networking meetings and the 5,000 leads group and, you know, join this, do that, and take massive action and, you know, all that. And I'd feel like totally inferior and totally inadequate, like, oh, my God, I don't have what it takes to succeed. I'm never going to be able to do a business. I'm never going to be able to do it that way. And then I'd read spiritual books or self-help books and all of that. And you know, they'd be like, you know, just say this affirmation, you know, just affirm this thought. And part of me would think, God, I hope there's a light in me because, you know, like the electricity company might be turning mine off. So I hope they're right that there is a light in me, you know. And so I wanted something more tangible. And so I think what I was craving and needing was a book that would show me how to find my own power and my own way to succeed and my natural strategies and my inspiration. And really, that's what this work is about. If you're looking to have an inspired life, an inspired and unstoppable life, if you're looking to really live a calling, it comes from a different source. It comes from your soul, your heart, your essence, who you are. And so it really is about learning, how do I listen to my desires and how do I trust them? And I'm always so excited to share that with, you know, artists and entrepreneurs and dreamers and meaning makers, because we're the people who have this unparalleled genius inside us. You know, we're the people who really have come here to make a difference. And so, and I know how miserable it is to have that in you and not know how to do it.
Yes. And I love the point you make in the book about how this source within us, this drive, this passion that creates the work itself, also creates our means of getting it out into the world.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to look like what all the rules tell us it should look like.
I think that was my biggest lesson in this, because I kept so worried about what are other people doing, what are they doing, they have the right way, I bet they have the right way. And it took me so long to start realizing, but like I said in the book, that the electricity that inspires those dreams also inspires the means. You know,
okay.
So many of us get inspired and excited about what we want to do, but then we try to turn it into something standardized or what other people are doing or the formulas, and then we lose our passion, then we lose our mojo, then we lose that connection, and then it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's music to my ears. Not the doesn't work part, but the inspired passion.
If I could sing now, I would sing, but I can't. I wrote a book this time, I danced, not this time I sang.
So in your new book, I love that you distinguish inspired success from linear success. So would you tell us a little about that?
Absolutely. It's kind of what we've been touching on a little bit, is that inspired success is kind of that learning to listen moment by moment to your desires and to start trusting that there is an innate path within you, that there is a code, a design already within you. Linear success, most of us have gone down that path of there's a right track, you know, you just, you know, get this job to get this bonus, get this bonus to get this house, get this
yes.
degree to get the job, you know, all of that, that there's a cookie cutter way, a formulaic way, and many of us have felt just crippled by that, you know, of that, again, these kinds of dreams don't fit into that kind of track. So I'll give you an example. You know, for me, so much of what inspired success is, it's really learning to follow your heat, follow the energy. And
yes.
so I struggled with this because I'm ambitious and I'm logical and I was trained as an attorney. And so, you know, in every one of my business encounters, that logical, crazy mind would kick in. So I remember, and I tell this story in the book, where there was one point I was at a trade show, and I was, this was for my first book, I was at a trade show, and, you know, my logical, ambitious side is saying, okay, You have to connect with important people. You have to meet media people. You have to find the right people. You have to make great connections. And so, of course, I just felt like, oh, my God. I felt like some huckster in a scratchy wool suit, you know, like, oh, my God, I'm a fraud, and I have to make the right people and say the right things. And I was just really not having a good time. And then I stopped and I realized, you know, Tam, if you're trying to connect with people from a place of you have to do this, this is the right thing, and you're not connected, you're not feeling good, you're not going to genuinely make a connection. Nothing good is going to happen. And so I tried an experiment. I just thought, I'm going to drop the formula. I'm going to drop the agenda, and I'm just going to listen to my guidance. I'm going to listen to my energy. I'm going to listen to my mojo. Which led me to buying coffee. That's what I do.
Good start.
Which led me immediately to buying some coffee. And then I just thought, if I weren't thinking linearly, if I was just following where do I feel drawn, where there's a spark, I went over to this booth of this woman who was selling earrings. And I thought, well, shopping, that's my mojo. Here, we have it. You know, and so I started connecting with this woman, and I wasn't trying to make anything happen. I was just hanging out with her, and we were laughing, and I'm always fascinated with artists anyway, so she's talking to me. Anyway, we end up having this amazing, lovely conversation, and then it turns out that she knows one of the directors of one of the organizations I was trying to get in and speak at, and she said, oh, my God, you'd be perfect for them, and she ended up making that call for me. I ended up getting that speaking engagement. And I just love that story because it was such a nonlinear way to do it. But it was when I was just listening to my desire and connected, you're electric, you're alive, and things just work.
I love that story, too. That is one of my favorites, and I've actually shared it with many others. It's inspiring. Yeah, follow the energy. So I'm so glad you shared that one in this conversation. Now, early in the book, you make what I call a bold statement that we have to choose to be called to this path of inspired
mm-hmm.
success. But I know a lot of people who don't have a sense of feeling called in any particular direction. They know
mm-hmm.
they don't like what they're doing, doesn't inspire them or feed their soul, but they don't know what they do want. Is that sort of why you say the choice is to be called rather than to follow the call?
Partly, yes. You know, of that. You know, I would say both. I would always say, you know, follow a call if you're getting it. But if God is on the line, I'm not going to say no. Tama said, don't follow that. You know, I have to be called, right? No, so, let's not get hung up here, people. Okay. I guess the point I'm trying to make, and it is a bold statement. You're absolutely right. That. For me, I realized that I needed to choose to be called. I needed to choose to believe that I was called. You know, because so many times I think we don't believe in our dreams. We don't, you know, we think they're frivolous, you know, of that. We think they're things to be squelched. You know, when I wanted to be a writer, I thought, you know, oh, God, you know, I wish it was something else, and this is silly, and this is crazy. And when I say choose to be called, it's like I want you to consider that you have your dreams for a reason, that everything that is speaking to you, that is lighting up for you, it's for a reason. And what happens, you bring up a great point where people don't feel like they know what they love or what, you know, what they're called to do. And partly what I see happen all the time is that it's that we need to take an action sometimes. We need to really follow through on the idea that we're getting before it kicks in and we really feel like, oh, yes, this is it. So what happens is most of us are waiting for this clarity and conviction and this lightning bolt and this, oh, my God, for this I came, and the marquee lights, and yes, I meant you. I really did mean you.
Mm-hmm.
We're waiting for all of this before we take an action, before we take the painting class, we take a writing class, we decide to become a coach, we decide to leave our job, right? We're waiting for that really conviction. And so when I say choose to be called, I want you to know that you're meant to succeed in the work you love, that you're meant to succeed in what you love. You're designed to succeed in that. And if you knew that, you might have an idea that, well, maybe I want to write, or maybe I want to sing, or maybe whatever it is. And then you might take a step in that direction, and the step in that direction will give you an experience, and the experience will give you the feeling that, oh my God, for this I came, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not a head thing, right? We keep waiting for our heads, like in our heads, to feel convinced of this, but the experience will convince you. And I just want people to have that sense of, but I meant to do this. That's why that idea is coming to me. And again, it might not be that, you know, if you have the, you know, the idea to paint, that that means, oh, yes, I'm meant to be a painter and I'm going to sell in 1,000 galleries. It might just mean that I'm meant to paint on Wednesday night when that idea is coming. And then once I'm there, I connect with something else and something else gets inspired, right? So, but I think so many people don't know what they love because they don't want to know. You know, they hear it, but they don't want to hear that. They want it to be a different answer, or they don't trust that that's it. And so,
Yes. So
they just ignore it, or they wait for something else. And again, I just want everyone to know that you are meant to succeed in the work you love. You're meant to thrive in what you're meant to do. And if you hold that and you start knowing that, you're going to take different actions. You're going to have different resources. You're going to have different experiences. And I'll say one other quick thing about it is that, you know, in my own career, there's so many times where, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're doing this work. I'm a seminar leader, and, you know, and there'd be so many things that would come up that were challenges or frustrations, or didn't, you know, a coaching client cancels the week you need that check, you know, or the speaking engagement you thought you were going to get into doesn't come through, or whatever it is. So many of us are basing our success or our failure on a circumstance. And I want to start orienting to knowing that it's not in the details, it's in the destiny. It's not in the details of what happens, it's in the destiny. It's in you. You're meant to do this. And yeah, a client can cancel, no big deal. You know, a speaking engagement cannot come through, no big deal. If you're meant to do this, if you're called, if there's a destiny here, you'll just keep going and something else will come through.
Oh, there's so much good stuff there. Wow. The piece that you mentioned early on around just take the step, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard for our minds to grasp that we, as you say, you can't plan an inspired life. So
mm-hmm.
It's follow the energy, follow the tingle, as I often say,
mm-hmm.
and just take that step. And it feels so insubstantial.
Yes.
When you're longing for some, you know, deeply fulfilling.
Right.
Career.
When you're not even looking, longing for that, you're longing for the map to the deeply fulfilling career.
Yeah.
That's what everybody wants. I mean, they want the career, but they want, you know, but a lot of times they, you know, if you tell them, as I will, you've got that career. I promise you have that career if you want it. And it comes by doing what we're talking about, following that desire, following that inclination, following that instinct, moment by moment by moment.
Yes. So there are just so many things that you've already said in this conversation and that you say in the book that I just think are brilliant. And here's one of my favorites from the book. This is a direct quote for you listeners. The problem isn't that inspired individuals can't face reality. The problem is that they do, and they let it eclipse their instinct and excellence. I just love that. It's so beautifully stated. And it's obviously a theme that comes up throughout the book repeatedly. Whether the reality being faced is your latest bank statement or some expert's opinion about all the reasons your dreams are impractical or past experiences that didn't seem to go too well. And it's so easy to be immersed in that reality. So I'm curious, what are some of the ways that you've learned to recognize that either you or your clients are really overly absorbed in that kind of reality in a way that could be eclipsing their instinct and excellence?
Well, I think the first thing is to really recognize that they're really are two realities, you know, of that when I'm stuck in that, well, this is reality, this is how their things are. For years, I never even realized that there was another choice.
Mm.
I never even realized that, no, this is not how things are. Just like the example I gave earlier of I had the belief that, well, you could never make money as a writer. And so I never even questioned it. I never even looked at it. And I would have denied my whole life. I would have denied the privilege of being a best-selling author and connecting with thousands of people all over the world, you know, and the joy and the gratitude that I feel for this work is amazing. That one belief would have blocked everything. So I guess the first thing I would say with that is that, you know, many of us just need to come to that awareness that it's not, you know, people will say, well, you have to be realistic. And it's like, no, you don't. Not in that way. I'm grounded. I'm very practical. I'm very grounded. But when most people are saying you have to be realistic, you know, I almost hear it as you have to be limited. You have to be cynical. You have to accept the way things have always been. And on an inspired path, we're moving into something else. We're moving into what has never been, what is about to come, what we alone know. You know, each of us, that's why I'm so passionate about artists and entrepreneurs and visionaries, and because each of us has this light in us, this love in us that can bring something else to this planet. And sometimes no one else knows what that is. We don't even know what that is sometimes. So that's why, for me, it's so pivotal that we listen to it. But you asked a great question of, well, okay, so how do you recognize when you're in that fear, or how do you recognize, you know, how do I see it in a client, or how do I see it in myself? I think the biggest thing to pay attention, and in all this work, is how do you feel? How
yes.
do you feel? How do you feel? Because all of my mistakes have come from my mind and my head that has told me, well, you have to do this, and this is what normal people do. This is what you should do. This is the way to make it, right? And this is a path of, you know, in the book I talk a lot about following your mojo, following that energy, that desire, and it's all about paying attention to, is this draining me, or is this energizing me? Is this uplifting me, or is it, you know, killing me? And so one of the other distinctions, so I always pay attention to that, is how does it feel? Because when you're in fear, it just feels terrible, right? It feels very disconnected. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, when we're in fear, it feels compulsive. There's almost like a compulsion, like you just get into this thing of, but I have to do this, but I have to do this, but I have, you know, almost like that unquestioned, you know, not even willing to question it. And of, while I'm all about passion and energy and fullness and feeling like, yes, I have to do this, there's a very different feeling. There's a very different feeling between that and the have to in a compulsive way. And that we're remembering in this time, there's nothing ever that you have to do to make it on this path. There is nothing that you have to do to make it on this path. This is going to come from what we allow, from what we receive, from what we know inside us that, you know, I always say to people, I don't want the kind of success that I can make happen. I did that already. I want the success I could never make happen. You know, I want the kind of flow and that largeness and that grandness that comes from co-creating with that energy. So it's a practice. All of this is just practice, and it's a life practice. And that's why I wrote the book, and that's why I do the work I do, and that's why I'm doing this work for the rest of my life. It's a practice.
Hmm. Wow. Gorgeous. So this is actually touching on a couple different things. The fear piece, you said there's a difference. So there's, because that's one of the questions that I've had to grapple with is some things that I do, I don't realize until later that it came from fear. Like it felt like, oh, there's the answer. I'm terrible at marketing. This course, this will, and I get excited about it. It feels like excitement.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look back on it, it's like what was underneath of that was fear. Fear that if I don't do it, I'll never be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So was it really excitement, do you think?
Well, clearly it wasn't. But in the moment, it felt that way. It felt like,
okay.
Oh, phew, thank God I found this because I'm a loser at this
stuff. Found the magic bullet now.
I found the magic bullet. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm.
So it was just, I just think as you're saying, this is a practice. I think just this whole intention of being really self-aware and checking in and really getting clear about how you truly feel.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that also brings up...
And I'm just going to say some more about that because it's just such a good point of of just that, you know, so sometimes, because I can relate to your excitement thing, and sometimes I think it's not excitement, I think it's adrenaline, you know, and I think especially in our culture, we're adrenaline junkies, or we feel empowered suddenly, like, I can make this happen now, and, you know, same theme again of, you know, one of the things I always tell my clients is that to pay attention, especially like with marketing, because I have fallen into the same thing of, you know, especially when you're scared, right? When you're scared or your business isn't doing well and you think, I better market. It's like, that's the worst time to market. It's the worst time. You are not in your right mind. You are not attractive. No one will want you. You know, and it's like, and so I always tell people to think, are you coming from desperation or are you coming from inspiration? You know, are you coming from fear or are you coming from love? Those are just check-ins. You know, and so I might be able to do the same thing, to write a marketing piece, but this time I'll change it into my love of the work, my love of what it could do for someone, my love of what this really is about, rather than, oh, my God, if I don't get somebody in here, you know, I won't pay a bill, you know, I mean, whatever it is, right? So, but, you know, I tell another story in the book about that, which for me was so educational, because one of my issues always was that, again, I made everybody else right. They know how to do the right things. They get it all right. And I had worked one time with a conference organizer, and this woman was ambitious and driven and literally wore the red power suit and had the day timer and had the this. And, you know, and she was just going 8 million miles an hour. And my mind was comparing myself to her, thinking, see, why can't you be like that? Why can't you get stuff done like her, you know? And she had all these leaflets printed, and she had radio spots done, and she did everything to market this conference. And at one point, I remember even asking her, you know, are you excited about it? Do you love it? And she said, I don't have time for that now. I've got to market it. You know, just like, okay then. And so what was really, really educational for me, the conference did really poorly. It did not get attendance. She did not do well financially. And for me, it was this pivotal lesson of realizing you can force action. You can make yourself act. You can force actions, but you can't force attraction. And that's what I realized, is that for me, I think everyone really does know where we're coming from, if we're coming from desperation or if we're coming from love. And so, again, it's just a practice. And in our culture, it's so prevalent to do, and an inspired path comes from something else.
Yes. And not just do, but do it the right way. Do it this
way.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a good point. I don't mean to say that we don't do things, but we take inspired actions. We take our actions, the actions that are right for us.
Okay, so let me shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about money.
Money.
Because in my experience, that is one of the biggest fears people have. It's one of the reasons why they don't follow their dreams. They're afraid they won't make good money, or that it will take a lot of money even to get started. And it seems to me you have mastered the art of genuinely staying connected with your passion and not making it about the money, yet also not falling prey to the whole starving artist stereotype.
Yeah,
it seems like
starving.
You let yourself really want the amount of money that makes sense for your life, and you know how to invite it in without losing touch with the core of your passion and your desire. So I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about your perspective on money and how it fits into being wildly successful and how you've managed to develop such a healthy relationship with it.
Oh, honey, we could be talking for hours.
I know. That was like 10 questions in one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, which I would love to do. They're all great questions. So I guess I'll just free associate here. So I guess the biggest thing I see when I'm working with clients is that, you know, it's almost like we need to redefine what success is, or just that we use all these old standards. Like, money becomes this badge of shame, you know, when we're doing the work we love, where we're like, oh, my God, I had the most amazing time. I was flying. I helped this client. They changed their life. oh, but you know, I didn't make that much, you know, or oh, but you know, I don't make that. I don't make, you know, seven figures now. And it's that we really need to start redefining where that success comes from, because we even need to monetize it, I believe. Because, you know, I had to do that in my own life, of that, you know, certainly there are places in my career where I don't make as much, or didn't then make as much as I did as an attorney. And I had to really look at that and realize, yeah, but there's a million places. First of all, I'm freaking wildly happy, so who cares?
Yeah.
But beyond that, but even on a financial level, I started realizing, well, you're not one of the people who's going to have a heart attack on Monday morning. What's that worth financially? You know, you're going to be there for your children if that's, you know, if you're raising children. You're going to be there for your children in a whole different way, as a role model, as a beautiful walk on this earth. What's that worth financially? You can take a walk on a Wednesday in the park and not have to tell someone when you're self-employed. What's that worth financially? You know, so I really needed to start doing that. The other thing I would say about that too, because this comes up all the time, particularly when you're starting your own work and you're not yet solvent or all the way solvent, is that I always look at least in my own work, I always looked at, again, how does it feel? How does it feel? Because for me, there were times, you know, like when my first book, This Time I Dance, came out, I put myself on the road for that book at different times, you know, so I'd go to different places and speak and, you know, sell books or CDs. And there were many times where at best I would break even, you know, or I wouldn't lose money at least. And what I kept looking at that as was just, there was so much progress, though. I felt this wild energy that, oh, my God, I'm really going somewhere. I'm really developing something. Or it was an experience that you couldn't pay $1 billion for, you know, of just, it was like, for me, it was like this meeting with the shaman of life, you know, of that I was having this private tutorial with myself, like, here's you becoming what you're meant to be. And so for me, that was priceless. And was I making money? No, not yet. But I deeply, deeply believed that the energy, that kind of love, that kind of energy, that kind of excitement, if I developed it, would go somewhere. And I was willing to do that, and I will be willing to do that in any situation that I feel that energy for. So I think that's a biggie about money, is that everybody's looking at the net value of something and not the real value of something. I'll just pre-associate one other thing, because like I said, I could talk for hours on this. And just one other quickie thing is that I do love making money, and I am tired of this starving artist model. And for people who do holistic work or spiritual work or whatever, you know, I see a lot in that culture as well about, well, you know, I don't want to charge that much because it's spiritual, or people feel worried about charging money because they love it. You know, well, I love this work. And it's like, for me, that's why you should value it. And so I deeply believe that this is a calling. I deeply believe that my gifts, my resources, my geniuses represent an amazing power on this planet. And I deeply believe I'm a steward of those gifts. And to be a good steward, I need to be a good steward financially too. I need to steward money as well, meaning I need to value those gifts. I need to make other people value those gifts. I need to help them see what this really is. And for me, it's always come back down to, when I valued it, when I bought it, so did everybody else. Mm. So I think the whole money question, you know, my God, it's just, that's the best therapy on the planet. It's like primal scream therapy. You know, look at your checkbook. It's like, you will learn about yourself. But I guess I want people to have it all. For me, wild success is thriving on every level. And that doesn't mean that everybody has to make six figures or, you know, be on Oprah or whatever, because, you know, our culture has success just defined by that. But I define wild success not by your portfolio or by your possessions, but it's more about that you're doing the right thing with your time on earth, that you know that you're doing the thing you came here to do with your time on earth. To me, that's the wildest success there is.
Yes, that's one of my favorite quotes in your book. I love that. And that piece you just mentioned about trusting how you feel,
mm-hmm.
the energy, more than the current set of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Because how you feel is what's going to generate the future set of numbers.
Exactly. I always
yeah.
say, you know, I always, you've heard me say this. I've always said this, that, you know, the bottom line is a flat line.
I know. I love that. Love it. Don't do the math, baby.
Don't do the math.
I still tell myself, you know, being a former accountant, I still tell myself, Suzanne, stop doing the math.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of your first lessons.
The math just measures what is. It does not measure what will be.
What
the energy
be,
measures
yeah.
what will be.
Yes. So I can't resist sharing yet another of my favorite quotes from your book, which is that I finally got it. That my wildest dreams could never come true until I remained wildly true to myself.
Hmm.
And I feel like in some ways that is the crux of creating inspired success, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I like hearing my quotes.
They're great,
oh,
aren't
that's
they?
That's so nice. That is very nice. Thank you. Absolutely. And again, you know, this whole book is written from, you know, my experience of years and years of coaching thousands of people on their dreams, their calling, and years of doing it myself, of really taking this from scratch and putting it out there. And I had to learn that over and over and over about that your wildest dreams come from being wildly true to yourself. And where I remember one specific place that, you know, comes to mind when I think of that is there was a person in my life, in my career at one point that seemed like she had all the power. She could open up all these opportunities for me. You know, she was like the gatekeeper to the kingdom. And you know, so I was working with her and I was so excited. But then it started getting didn't feel good. She was starting to flake out, or things weren't going well, and I started not being authentic. You know, I started to just try to please her and be the good girl and not say anything, and it just got twisted and ugly, going down a deep path that way. And I finally realized, you know, how is this going to work if I'm not being wildly true to myself, if I'm not standing in my own authenticity or authority, how am I going to be in my greatest light? And so one of the greatest lessons I learned at that time was I walked away from that relationship, and it was such a big deal to me at the time. And I have this line in the book, and it's one of my touchstones, of that I wasn't walking away from power and opportunity. I was walking away with power and opportunity.
Yes.
Because that power and opportunity was in me. And that has been my lesson over and over and over about staying wildly true to myself and to not compromise my desires and not compromise my energy and not compromise what I think I'm supposed to be. That doesn't mean I don't grow. That doesn't mean I don't try on different things. It doesn't mean I don't accept other people's opinions. But that deep core of that energy, of especially for those of us in business, we're always trying to think what's hot, what will sell, how can I be more this, how can I be less that. I hear that from clients all the time, like, I wish I was more this, or I wish I didn't have this quality to me, you know, whatever. And it's like, to me, the way you are, exactly the way you are, that's where your heat is, that's where your energy is, there's something miraculous there. And for me, your wildest success is going to come from you being natural, from you being authentic, and from you knowing that you don't need power outside yourself. You bring power to the table.
Amen.
I was waiting for an amen.
Amen, sister. Wow. Yeah, that was one of my favorite quotes, too. You're not walking away from opportunity. You're walking away with it. I just love that.
Mm-hmm.
That is just so just profound, and it kind of just wakes you right up to the deeper truth. Thank you. So I'm going to switch gears again. In your book,
mm-hmm.
you generously share with us a lot of examples of guidance that you have received from your inner voice, particularly through journaling. And I have to tell you, much as I value my own inner voice, and I do, I am blown away by how profoundly articulate and clear yours is. Was it always that way for you, or did the voice itself become clearer and wiser and more loving as you stayed on the path?
No, I came from the womb speaking like that. No. Yes, I said, go forth and conquer. No, absolutely, you nailed it. It's like everything else. It's through practice. It's through devotion. It's learning how to listen. And so, no, absolutely not. It was not always that clear. And it's not, keep in mind, what I share in a book, I'm going to share with you my better ones.
The best stuff, yeah.
I'm not that crazy and authentic. Although I'm vastly going down that path, it seems. Over time, I have come to trust it and listen to it and follow it. And I've learned its tone and I've learned its presence, and over time, it's grown that way. I also personally attribute a lot of it to, I've taught A Course in Miracles for over 20 years. And A Course in Miracles, is a path of living in love instead of fear, and it's really about listening to an inner voice. And some of that tonality, some of the authority in that material, I think kind of leaked over into me, or influenced me. And I definitely think that, I think I hear that voice. I think that's the voice I hear when I really listen. And again, it took time because, there's the part of my brain that's going, oh, you're not really hearing that, or that's not really true. And I've just learned how to hone that, or just follow that and follow that, follow that. And it's never been wrong.
So are there practices that you would recommend? I know that you have a section in the back of the book with a lot of amazing transformative practices and exercise that can literally help us shift from a fear-based paradigm of this linear success to a love-based experience of inspired success. So are you willing to share with us some of the practices or exercises that you have felt to be the most potent, both in cultivating the inner voice, but also in just cultivating this whole shift?
Absolutely. And the book is filled with different exercises and, filled with different possibilities and things that, for me worked. And my favorite is kind of what we were just talking about, writing to that inner voice. And so I call it inspired self-dialogues. And I've personally used this technique nonstop. I have friends that will, look at me and say, are you writing to the voice, honey? Because they know I'm not. And so basically what it is that, you write your fear out. So let's say you're having one of those thrown off crazy days, and you write down your fears and your concerns and how it's not going right. It's never going to go right. You failed. You're always going to fail. But, just all the junk that we all hear. And it's good to hear what your voice of fear would say, because it's good to start becoming familiar with what that voice sounds like, because we don't, like you said, we don't realize it's fear. That's all we're hearing. We think it's reality.
Yes.
Then I shift gears, and then I ask, what would my inspired self say, or what would the voice of love say, or what would the highest loving champion, inner advocate, I think it's your inner success coach, what would that voice say? And sometimes if people can't get to that or hear that, I often ask them to think about, well, what would you say to your best friend? Someone you totally, totally believed in, somebody you wanted the world for, or your child. Or sometimes people get to it by thinking about they have a nurturing mom or a nurturing husband or wife, and they can borrow that voice. Or sometimes people have a spiritual connection or a religious connection, and so for them they're writing to God or the angels or Jesus or, a Native American religious figure. I mean, just everybody's got their access, and so you might initially just try it. It might feel awkward initially, but just try it. It's amazing, and what I do is I dialogue back and forth with them, so I'll have the fear right, I'll have love right back to me, and it's a wonderful way of accessing that love when you're scared.
Yes, it is. And I might also add that I think reading books like yours, I mean, I can find myself, my wise self will borrow from you. and I think, you know what, if this resonates with me, then this is my wise self speaking to me.
Yes,
if this really has an energy for me and it feels real and true, then that is my wisdom coming through.
Absolutely true. I interviewed a nun years ago. When I was first freelance writing, I did an article and I interviewed these nuns because I was always fascinated with callings, you know, like finding your connection or whatever. And so I just was asking them, and it was so sweet. There was this tiny, tiny little nun, like she was like 3 feet practically. I mean, just so tiny. And her name was literally Sister Innocence. And it was so sweet. And she just looked at me so sweetly. And because I asked her, like, how do you hear it in her voice? Or, you know, how did you know God was talking to you, whatever? And she looked at me like she was just madly in love. And she said, oh, he leaves me lines in books. Isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
I just,
yes,
like, wanted to cry. Like,
yes.
Oh, he leaves me lines and books. And it's like, I was touched all the time by lines and books, but I never realized that that might be my guidance talking to me.
Yes.
So it's exactly what you just said.
Which is why we're so glad you wrote this book. And speaking of which, I am curious about how you wrote it. And by that, I mean, I know that your life and your work are so full, and of course I also know how many things an entrepreneur has to attend to in order to sustain a thriving business. So where and how did you find the time and the energy and the focus to write this?
I know people would always look at my speaking calendar or, you know, like my workshop calendar and think, how the hell are you writing a book? And so,
yeah.
You know, one of the things, and I know you know this, and but most of us, you know, I think, again, in our culture, we have to be told this over and over and over, is that a lot of times we don't make time for what we really love. We don't make time for what we really, really love. And I keep having to learn, as does everyone else, that actually doing what we love makes time. You know, that if you make time to do what you love, it will give you time in your life. And what I mean by that is on the days that I write, I'm more connected and I'm more relaxed and I'm more joyous because I'm doing what I really, really want to do. So I show up differently. And I just don't have the same, problems in a weird way of like I may be just as busy but it flows differently or I react differently or I have different resources or different abilities. And one of the things I've seen in my own work is that when you're doing the work you love, it really does not take energy. It takes time, takes focus, but does not take energy. When you're really doing something that's natural to you or authentic to you, it gives you energy.
Yeah.
It gives you more energy. You know, people will look sometimes and think, you know, oh, my God, you're going to do a coaching client after you've just done a talk and after blah, blah, blah. And it's like, how can you do that? And it's like, because for me, it gives me energy. And so, again, it's just paying attention. And everybody's different, right? You know, I mean, we're all wired differently. So you're going to pay attention to, you know, when it is best to back off and that's not appropriate. But, again, so I think part of how I've done it or continue to do it is, at this point, even though my life is wild and crazy, it's also coherent. It's also coherent. I am never doing work. I'm rarely doing work that I don't love. And when I say rarely, I mean I still, every now and then, I'm still involved in some of the business stuff that, you know, I wish I wasn't as involved in. So that sometimes can get in my way. But I think that's the difference, too, is because I'm doing so much of the work I care about and that I love, it's coherent. It doesn't take energy. So I have more energy. I have more focus. I'm not, you know, people tell me all the time, oh, God, but I'm so exhausted. I'm so exhausted. And I think you're exhausted when you're not doing your dreams. You're exhausted when you're not doing what's right for you. And when you're doing more of what's right for you, I think things flow more. So that's not to say that, you know, it's easy. I mean, I just definitely, and as a writer, I would have preferred to have, you know, days or weeks to focus on it. But I just wrote in the cracks. I really did. I just wrote in the times I had. I wrote in the cracks. I made time where I could. And when I say my life is coherent, a lot of times a coaching client would say something, or I'd say something brilliant to the coaching client, and I'd think, oh, my God, that's so perfect for me.
It goes in the book.
It goes in the book. Enough about your issues. Let me write this down. All right, be done with your mother already. I want to write this down for my book. So I think a lot of times when you're doing the work you're meant to do, it all kind of flows together.
Yeah. so for people who are not as far along on the journey as you are and mm-hmm. have an inkling of what they might love and are, but are, you know, committed with full-time jobs and mm-hmm. families and all the stuff of life, what you most want them to know is to trust the passion itself, to make time for it.
Yes, yes. And that
and let that passion feed you, let that passion,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because, again, most of us are thinking, oh, it's frivolous, or, oh, that's
yeah.
not going to go anywhere anyway, or how am I going to feed my family on this? And the more you give that energy and love to it, the again, more energy comes back to you. I've had clients that it's been amazing where, you know, they can't leave a job, and so they're at their job, and they're doing what they love on the side, or they're building it. And I've seen them become more and more connected and alive and actually do better at their job. I literally had a client who just kept getting bonuses and bonuses, and we just laughed ourselves sick because she was doing less for the job than she'd ever done. She was doing more of what she really wanted to do on the side, and her energy was just so great. So she did show up in love and excitement at her job because she was showing up with love and excitement in her life.
In her life, yes.
You know, it just spills over. And then when you're not doing something you love, you just start having resentment and anger and bitterness and hopelessness and exhaustion. And so, again, the thing of doing something you love just starts to feed you and nurture you. And you start seeing that, well, maybe my job isn't in the way of my life. Maybe my job is going to help me feed this or support this while I build it and grow it into everything it's meant to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's perfect. So inspiring. I wanted to circle back before we wind down here on the statement you made very early on about how a single belief that you had
mm-hmm.
about writers don't make money or you can't make a career at writing, that could have stopped all of this. If you'd listened to it, that could have stopped all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you suggest people first identify the beliefs that are holding them back and then shift them? Dissolve them.
Read everything I write all the time.
I'll second that.
Yes, yes. Just follow everything I write. That is the billion-dollar question, and to me, that is the life practice. That is the life practice. And so I think it is starting to become aware of that. Again, you know that there's a negative or limiting belief in the way when you don't feel good, when it feels yucky, when you feel sad, when you feel thwarted, when you feel whatever, you are making it mean something. When a client cancels, you can make it mean, see, I'm never going to be able to support myself. Who am I kidding? I'm never going to go anywhere. Or you could make it mean, see, I'm not that valuable. Look, there, you know, I obviously wasn't that important. Or you could make it mean, hallelujah, I can write my book. You know, or you could make it mean, which I often do, there's a line in The Course in Miracles that says, I don't know what anything means. I don't know what anything means. So my negative belief, you know, will immediately rush in there and say, see, you're a failure. That's what this means. And I literally will have to pull myself out by saying, no, I don't know what anything means. And then going back to that original concept that I was saying of that you're meant to succeed in the work you love. I'm meant to succeed in this. I'm meant to. I'm designed to succeed in the work I love. So this doesn't mean anything in that way. You know, this doesn't, you know, if I notice that I'm making it mean I'm never going to go anywhere, I remind myself of that. So to shift the beliefs, I mean, there's a million different ways. Everybody's so different. You know, some people meditate, some people journal, some people talk to a therapist or a coach or their cat or all of the above. I personally like those inspired success dialogues. That's my, you know, that's one of my quickest, easiest ways to start shifting it. The other thing I would say, you know, I'll offer you another technique. It's in the book as well. Sometimes the best way to shift a belief is not to get into it to begin with. Sometimes the best way to not have to worry about getting out of a negative space is to start training and championing your mind not to go there to begin with. And so there's a technique in the book called win listing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really training your mind to focus actively focus on everything you're doing right, everything that's going right, everything that's working for you. And the reason I did it was because as entrepreneurs, everybody's focusing on, I'm not doing enough, I'm not doing enough, I'm not getting it done, I should be doing all these other things. And I wanted to start filling my clients' minds and my own mind with all the steps I had been taking, all the things that were working. And I make a really important distinction of it's not just external steps, it's internal steps as well. So many of us are working on ourselves from a personal growth point of view. And so, you know, maybe I was depressed 1/2 hour less today than I was yesterday. I'd put that on the win list.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Most of us would never put that on a list of accomplishments, right? We would only have the to-do list. And if you made progress, like, I usually have a hard time getting out of bed, but I got out of bed, you know, 10 minutes, you know, earlier than I would have, I put it on the win list. If I said the right thing to a client or to, you know, a sales call, I said the right thing, whether or not that person hired me or not, I'd put it on the win list. I showed up, you know, and I showed up and I did my best. I'd put that on the win list. If I send out a manuscript, I put that on the win list. It doesn't matter what happens to it. And
yeah.
Again, it's such a valuable technique for starting to recognize ourselves and validate ourselves and start championing ourselves. And it does make you feel better. You start realizing, oh, my God, I'm doing so much work towards this. I'm making so much progress. And so the more you're filling your mind with that, the less you're filling it with anything else.
Yes, perfect. Yeah, I've been using a form of that for years, and it's been essential, essential.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And shifting my orientation and my ideas of what's possible and how much progress I'm making. So
mm-hmm.
Perfect. So Tam, if there was one thing that you most wanted people to remember and take to heart after reading your book, what would it be?
You know, I just have to keep coming back to that same, you know, the whole book starts off with the theme of you're meant to succeed in the work you love. Your desire will take you all the way. And I guess what I'd want people to know more than anything else is that your dreams are real. You know, when you're inspired and you're excited and you have this idea of what you are and who you can be and what could happen for you, that's real. And everything else isn't. The fierce self, the limited self, the smaller self, the part of us. I'm not saying that we don't have to deal with that or that we shouldn't tend to that, but in terms of our identity, of what you know when you're inspired and excited and in love, to me that's what's real. And I'd want somebody to know that those dreams are coming to you for a reason. You have your instincts, your desires, your ideas for a reason. And if you follow them, you will meet a completely different self. You will undo all those negative beliefs. This is a spiritual calling that rocks. You will undo all those limits that have been in your way, and you will encounter a life that's amazing. I cannot even imagine. I mean, I cannot even imagine the heartbreak of if I hadn't chosen this life. There are so many instances where I almost gave up, or I doubted it, or I almost didn't choose it to begin with. And at this point, my one career decision has affected tens of thousands of other human beings. And I believe everyone's decisions, everyone's gifts are here for the planet, are here for other people. You know, people keep thinking, am I good enough? They're worried about, will my gift be good enough? And I want you to know that your gift is needed. There are people who need you. There are people who need exactly what you have, and you need to walk down this path. So I guess that's, I mean, I could go on and on. That's my thing, is that I'm so excited. There are so many brilliant artists and entrepreneurs and visionaries on the path right now that are really starting to look at what's inside them and what they can bring. And I just want to keep them motivated. I want to keep them on that. I want to be the champion. I want to be the one that says, yeah, I know that feels bad. I know you're scared, but keep going, baby. You know, this is real. This is real. And you are going to have that life every single minute.
Yes. Yes, yes, and you are a brilliant champion. Truly you are. So gifted. we need to hear what you are saying. We need to take that in.
Mm-hmm. Because there's so many people that didn't choose their lives, their right lives, denied themselves so many opportunities, and they'll call it realistic.
So here's to a whole new reality.
Yes. We are the ones. We are the ones.
We are the ones.
And I will just say, I will just end on this theme because I'm, you know, obviously passionate about it. But I deeply believe that these are the times as well. I deeply believe that we are now moving from the age of information into the age of inspiration. The days of looking outside us for information and all the calculations and all of that and statistics and data and experts. And we are now moving towards inspiration, that which is within us, that which we are meant to bring out into the world, because I think we are not here so much to make it in the world, but to remake the world, you know, to remake it with our gifts and our love and our ideas and our creativity and our stories and songs and businesses and medical advances and, you know, all the things that we dream of doing, I deeply believe the world needs at this time, and this is the time to do it, because I think that the old ways aren't working. It's no longer safe to deny the safest thing inside you. So I'm just so excited about these times.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait for people to hear this interview. So, okay. Thank you. So much for your time.
You're welcome, honey.
Wow. So again, the title of Tama's latest book is Inspired and Unstoppable, Wildly Succeeding in Your Life's Work, and it will be officially available on August 30th, but you can pre-order it now and get all kinds of juicy free gifts when you visit her website, which is Tama Keeves, again, TamaKieves.com. TamaKieves.com. You can pre-order her book and get all kinds of great free gifts. And you can also on her website.
And you know what? I should probably just mention with that, if you do want to pre-order it and get, you know, I have these Inspired Success Power Talks. They're interviews I've done with other visionaries and artists who have made it and how they did it. And also, you get a free ticket to a teleclass with me. It's a tele-coaching class that's based on the book where people are going to call in and ask questions about the book. So you get all that stuff. But to get that, if you go to the website, TamaKieves.com, it's TamaKieves.com/inspired. TamaKieves.com/inspired. And that will plug you in. And you can order the book from Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or any distributor you want from my website, but then it just takes you into a place where you're automatically registered to get all the other gifts. So just wanted to mention that.
Oh, that's perfect. Great. Thank you. And also on your site, too, they can download your free Inspired Success Launch Kit,
Launch You Kit,
right? And that has video coaching, audio interview, daily practices, and more. It's all designed to help you lose your fears, to create your own inspired strategies, and to live from your invincible potential.
Mm-hmm. So there's no more excuses now. You know,
no more excuses.
It's all out there, baby.
It's all out there.
Like,
and
I
also,
just
don't forget to join Tama and her Alive Tribe on Twitter and Facebook, and, of course, at TamaKieves.com.
Yes. Please join the tribe. There's so many of us that are doing this work. There are great conversations that go on Facebook and Twitter and my blog. And, you know, just jump in, get the support you need. And the Inspired Success Launch You Kit, I just designed that to just give people a lot of free resources and tools, because it's so easy to go into fear. And, again, I just want to champion people into knowing who they're meant to be and knowing there is another way and that this is a life practice, and that's what we're doing here. And thank you so much, Suzanne, for having me on your show, and thank you so much for the work you're doing in this world and for being such a wonderful advocate for other people and such a nurturing presence that way. You're doing amazing work, and I'm just so grateful that you're one of the people on the planet being an ambassador to this, and I appreciate your time today.
My deepest pleasure. Thank you.